The Chris Perillo Show is brought to you by Microsoft Windows Media. Download Windows Media Player 10 at Microsoft.com/Windows Media.
I have had so much fun with that digital camera, and of course it's how me and tonight's guest met through a picture I took with the digital camera. And I know I've sold more of those PowerShot S2ISs than you would believe. So that being said, I'm opening up the phone lines, 888-PERILLO, 888-7474-556. Pardon me, if you're listening right now, if you got a question, something on your mind, or if you even have a question for the guest, if it has to do with gaming, of all things, now that you've heard enough about gaming, or if you've hit a particular, as I'm doing right now, hiccup with your current setup, go ahead, give us a call. 888-PERILLO, 888-7474-556. And I've got a few questions I definitely wanted to address tonight, you know, while folks are calling in and Jake's taking the calls. This particular question came filtered through one of our forums in the Locker Gnome Windows Fanatics. It had to do with connecting to laptops. And this is from Amy. And I'm just going to read this email verbatim. Hi, just wondering if you can help. I have a work laptop and a personal laptop and would like to transfer photos from my work laptop to my personal laptop. Okay. What is the easiest way to do this? Is there some cord that I can buy that I can connect the two laptops, which will enable me to transfer the photos quickly? The work laptop is a Toshiba Satellite Pro. It's basically XP, and the personal laptop is an old Compaq running Windows 2000. So Amy is asking for advice regarding transferring photos, at least, back and forth. There are many ways that you can do this, of course. My suggestion is that you pick up a USB card reader, because if you've got photos, chances are you've transferred them, you know, onto some type of removable media, so you probably have removable media somewhere on hand. And then use this USB drive of sorts, and USB, like, you, it's like a flash drive, so you can get like a 9-in-1 device that can read SD and memory stick and compact flash and all this stuff. What you want to do with this then is you would connect this USB drive, this flash drive, this 9-in-1 media reader to your one laptop, copy the photos from that laptop onto the removable media card, and then, so you've got it copied onto the card, in that's the removable card sitting inside that drive, that 9-in-1 media reader, if you will, and then take that and then connect it to the second laptop. So effectively, you're just using it, the SD card or that compact flash card or whatever removable media you might have, as temporary storage to transfer your photos from one to the other. Now, the reason why I would suggest getting going this route is because, number one, it's simple. Number two, you probably should have a 9-in-1 reader regardless. It's a pretty good peripheral to have. I would just make sure that if you... Hopefully the laptop has a USB 2.0 connection. If it's just 1.1, which in some slightly older laptops it's likely to be, and it is quite possible with a Windows 2000 laptop, you're going to find the transfer rates to be just a little slower than normal. But this is usually going to cause the least amount of headaches and the least amount of problems in terms of transferring from one to the other. You could go the route of getting something called a crossover cable, and that would be directly connecting one machine to another. However, that said, without software to help you along, it's not very user-friendly. It takes some bit of configuring to do. So again, the route that I would take is copying photos from one laptop onto your removable media card, connected either, you know, through the 9-in-1 the device drive, or I suppose I should even say the digital camera. Now, the reason why I was hesitant on saying the digital camera at first, because most digital cameras that are out there only have a USB 1.1 connection, a slower connection, and you want to go with as fast as you can possibly get. And of course, depending on how much photos you have to transfer too, you could go the route of burning it to a CD and then transferring it that way. If you have a home network, using the home network and connecting over the home network and transferring photos that way. There's many ways that you can actually you can do this. You've got the work laptop, the personal laptop. If they're laptops, you can move them around. It doesn't matter really where they are. Certainly, there's several ways of doing this. My choice, my initial choice would be either copying them onto the removable media and then transferring that to the other computer. and using a USB 2.0 connection, and then falling back from that, it would probably be burning it to a CD, and then falling back from that, I would say going the route of transferring the files using some kind of a crossover cable. And the crossover cable, like I said, can be complex when it comes to setting things up, because you're basically connecting one machine to another machine directly. And it's important. You have to ask, when you go to the store, you have to ask for a crossover cable. It won't work with a regular network cable because of the way the wires are twisted around and the way they're directed and redirected on one end and another. So there's a few different solutions for you, Amy, and I do wish you luck with getting those transferred. You shouldn't have a problem with those scenarios, and you know, if you're thinking, you know, another direction, or it just seems like to be an unwieldy files that you need to get from one point or one laptop to the other, then I may have to think a little harder about that one. But my initial thoughts are using those three methods, and then you should be okay. So that's that question. Moving on to another one that I wanted to answer tonight from Mike, and he posted this feedback directly to the Chris Perillo Show website. It has to do with Windows Media Player 10. Now, here's the problem. This is what he writes. This is what Mike writes. Can't access WMV files or streamed WM media, Windows Media, that play or default to Windows Media Player 10. Have tried to check the network tab, but Windows Media Player won't let me open the tab. I click it, and nothing happens, so I can't check to see if the right boxes are checked. Do you think this is a registry problem? Ideas? I've tried to uninstall Windows Media Player 10, but can't get that to work. I've tried to reinstall, and that didn't work. I'm locked out of the network tab, so I can't access or play files. Now, it's very strange that you're locked out of the network tab, of all things. I'm not sure why that would be. I've never really seen that scenario play out. But in the Windows Media Player, if you can't even get the file to play back, you know, in terms of streaming through it, there may be a problem that's not necessarily inside of Windows Media Player. It may be something larger than that. It could be tied into a registry problem, but what I'm thinking is either you've got a codec installed, an errant codec, that's causing this problem. And the way to kind of troubleshoot around that might be downloading a separate media player that can also handle Windows Media Streams. Something like a Windows Media Player Classic might work. And the Media Player Classic just uses the codecs that are already installed in your system. And if you're able to pull in the URL or the Windows Media Stream URL through an alternative media player like Media Player Classic, or even Winamp, I think, will play Windows Media Streams as well. So, you know, either one of those alternative players or the multitude of others that support Windows Media Streams, if you can't get it at work in the other players, then it's a bigger issue than just Windows Media. If you can play it in those other players, then the issue is with the Windows Media Player, in which case I'm definitely going to have to do digging around. My first instinct, my gut tells me that you've got a codec installed that you may or may have not realized that you installed. And a codec is nothing more than a piece of software that translates audio and video for you. So if you've ever downloaded, let's say, an AVI file from the internet from a friend, and you couldn't get it to play. It said it can't play. It doesn't know what this file is. Well, you know it's an AVI file. You know you can play AVI files. Well, the issue is the way the video was encoded, it may have been encoded with a certain piece of software. And when sometimes this happens, you need a certain piece of software to decode it, and that's called a codec, essentially. And sometimes you install codecs inadvertently when you install, like, you know, movie editing programs or audio editing programs, and pretty soon, before you know it, certain media files that used to play just fine don't play fine anymore. And sometimes it can be a real pain in the neck to troubleshoot those things. So, again, try it playing those things back in a media player, a different media player that you may or may not already have installed. And if that doesn't work, then I would suggest downloading a couple of different utilities that are going to help you troubleshoot through the codecs installed on your system. One of them that springs to mind right now is a program called Sherlock. And if you do a search for Sherlock and codec, and by the way, you spell codec C-O-D-E-C. I'm not saying Kodak, like the camera company. I'm talking codec, C-O-D-E-C. Take a look. Sherlock, codec, type it in your favorite search engine, and up should pop a freeware utility that'll show you the codecs both audio and video that are installed in your system, quite possibly, you know, what they are and what they may be getting in the way of, and kind of help you get a better idea about what's installed and what's not installed. Another thing you may think about doing is if this is a recent problem, think back to some of the recent software that you installed. And chances are, and I'm not saying this is the case, but you may have installed an audio or video program or a program that had to do something with audio, video, you know, a multimedia application that pretty much destroyed the functionality of what you're trying to get to, i.e. the stream. Could be another media player, too, that you've already installed. So if you installed a media player that didn't play friendly with everything else, it may have done something that specifically had to do with the Windows Media Player stream. So try different media players. If you've already installed those different media players after the problem happened, it may be the media player's fault. There's a lot of messy stuff when it comes to media players, and unfortunately I've ranted about this several times, and believe me, you're not the only person to run into these headaches. So I'm going to put the emails on pause and bring back last week's guest. We've got 8-Bit Jake on the phone.
Yes, we do. Hello there.
I haven't seen you in like a week.
Well, yeah.
Were you at the Weblogger meetup last night?
Yeah, I was.
How many people were there?
Guess about 12.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
Who all was there? Can you remember?
A lot of the same people. Phil Terone was there from Make and Flash Enabled.
Yeah.
And he had a Apple Newton and a Apple eMate, the PDA laptop for kids.
So he was doing funky things with Apple products.
Yeah, yeah. But the big thing is yesterday there's a way to run Java applets on the PlayStation Portable, the North American PSP.
Really? Now, is this through the old firmware or the new one?
It's through firmware 1.5, which comes default in the current batch of North American PSPs.
Oh, so that's right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
All the people that have bought a PSP from launch in North America to now should be good, but now that they know about this, the latest firmware, so basically if you already have a PSP and you haven't updated, this will work. And they actually have, like, Java NES emulators.
Oh, yeah.
For it and stuff.
Yeah. You know, I unfortunately flashed a 1.5.1, so I'm going to have to miss out on a lot of these homebrews and the emulators for now.
Yeah, well, if you got a computer, you can always run them on that.
Yeah, that's exactly.
And I ended up getting Make magazine for my stepdad, who's for Father's Day.
Oh, did PT have some there?
Yeah, but I ended up actually buying it at the store. But he was showing it to everyone, and it's pretty cool that you can walk into the store and get it. Anyway,
God, that makes me
two quick technical questions.
Sure, sure.
One, I see your guest has a fair amount of experience in 3 Studio Max.
Yep. Yes, I do.
And I was wondering, sometimes it's like I'm working in 3D Studio Max and I'll have a really bad crash, and then the file will get corrupted and not open up, not import, and nothing. And I'll lose like half a day's worth of work. Have you had any experience in trying to recover corrupted Max files?
Yeah, I've run into that before, and unfortunately, once the files are corrupted, they're hosed. The only way I've known to prevent that, oddly enough, is to turn off the auto backup stuff. With the projects I've worked on, if I had Character Studio installed at the same time and auto back turned on, that would be a likely combination of having corrupted files if Max ever crashed. So for the longest time, I disabled the auto back feature and made I was very careful about saving multiple versions of my files.
Yeah, that's what I usually end up doing.
And I don't know if they fixed that with 7 and 7.5 since Character Studio is now part of Max.
Yep.
But I haven't run into any weird crashes at all lately.
No, mostly I encountered this was on like version 4.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So and then version 6, 7 has been pretty stable. But
yeah, 6 and 7 have been very stable for me.
Anyway, my other question is, I have a eMachines laptop, one of the 15-inch widescreens.
Oh, come on, Jake.
this is one computer ago. And
that's still no excuse.
It was a good computer at the time, and I got it for less than $1,000.
All right, all right.
And plus, the widescreen is the first really time I've seen a widescreen on a laptop, and it seduces you. Because I just saw the... Anyway, the touchpad just stopped working on me mysteriously.
It's an e-machine.
I know, but have you heard of any... I took it apart and looked at the ribbon cable. It's just Windows all of a sudden stopped recognizing the built-in touchpad. It recognizes USB devices fine, but, you know, I opened it up, looked at it, all of the circuits, all the connecting cable looks good. Do you have any, there any suggestions that you can... I can either repair or get rid of it. It's over about 2 years old, so there's no warranty on it.
You know, I fall back on my original comment. The touchpad may be irreversible in terms of repairing it. Yeah. If you still have a warranty, I mean, certainly, you know.
No, it's not. It's long gone.
Okay, then.
And I've also cracked the case to clean the fan out, so the warranty is long gone.
My suggestion is pick up a USB mouse.
Yeah,
and
that's what I've currently been doing.
Yeah, because I think the touchpad is pretty much dead on arrival.
Yeah.
From this point forward, that's so even sometimes with keyboards, it's kind of the same way. It's an all or nothing thing, and when that connection's flaked out, unless you know how to replace it yourself, it's probably not going to be worth the expense of going through like a computer repair shop. They're likely to tell you the same thing, or even.
Do you know of any place where I can actually get? See, the problem is I don't know if the unit's faulty or it's not a Windows setting, because I tried going to the driver, touchpad maker's website, and got the most recent drivers. And updated all the Windows stuff. So, and
well, here's a question.
Try doing Windows one of the driver rollbacks.
Okay, try this then.
Restore.
Try this, and this may work or not. If you've got a live CD distribution of Linux,
yeah.
Try popping that into the drive.
Like what's it, Canopix?
Yeah, Canopix, or you know any there's a multitude of them now. Pop it into the drive. Hmm. It should. You may even try a couple of different ones just in case, but it should recognize the touchpad as the mouse. At least in Knoppix, when I've tried it on a laptop, it never had a problem detecting.
So that's sort of a way of telling if it's a Windows or it's an actual hardware problem.
Yeah, I mean that's the route that I would take. I mean, my inclination would, like I said, e-machines, number one. Number two, I would.
Well, company's not around. I mean, the company is now owned by Gateway.
Yeah, oh, God.
Not much better there.
Yeah, exactly. One company sucked up by another bad one. I go ahead, try a different try a distribution of Knob or Linux, and then if it doesn't work, my guess is, you know, regardless of the Linux driver issue problems that may exist, I'd be more inclined to say that it's the actual hardware that's kind of flaked out on you, in which case you're probably going to be stuck with a USB mouse for the remainder of that laptop's life.
Yeah, what pretty much is, it's at my girlfriend's place as a backup computer and stuff, or when I absolutely, you know, I got my iBook, and so this is when I absolutely need to run Windows app.
See, why don't you get Virtual PC?
Because no one at Microsoft will give me a copy, and it's like $150 bucks, right?
Yeah, it's actually kind of pricey.
Yeah. Because I got a real PC, and so it's sort of...
Yeah, but it's an e-machine. That's not... No, that's not fair. You can't compare an iBook to an e-machine.
No. It was definitely a nice upgrade.
Yes. So give that a shot, and then let me know whether it's completely flaked on you or if it ended up working in Linux, in which case we'll have to troubleshoot
it
further.
Definitely give it a shot.
All right.
Fire off an email. Hey, congratulations on being on the Seattle Times today.
Yeah.
Yeah, I opened up SeattleTimes.com, and it's like, hey, that nerd looks familiar.
Yeah, it's kind of scary, huh?
Yep.
Yeah, the Seattle PI is running something tomorrow, and tomorrow is going to be, this picture is going to be even scarier than the one today.
You need to print that out and, like, give it to your, there's your, you know, next time mail it to your family and stuff.
The Seattle Times photo?
Yeah.
As a Christmas card photo?
Well, yes.
Yeah.
That'd work.
Yeah. Maybe. We'll see.
Well, anyway, have a good one.
Right. Thanks, Jake.
Sure.
We appreciate it. We had Jake runs a website. In fact, he's the number one hit on Google for joystick.
Oh, wow. That's pretty cool.
And he's got a blog. He's been running for a while, or a website that's now a blog that's been running for a while that has to do with, like, he writes about games and does reviews on games. I know everything that we seem to be doing lately is just hovering around games, even though that's not our life. Maybe it's just we're voyeuristic and like, ooh, games, ooh, cool.
Oh, games are fun, you know?
It's good diversionary stuff. I mean, in terms of, like, getting away from life, at least for a little while.
Or we're just really late to the party.
That's probably part of the case, I guess. I don't know. After hitting the PSP, maybe I just got a little more interested in what people were saying about what they were doing with handheld devices.
You got really excited about games, though, when the Nintendo DS first came out, too.
Yeah, a little. I mean, Nintendo DS was unique for about a week, and then I was like, the uniqueness is gone. But one of the things that I look forward to every week is hearing from one of our regular contributors, Jason, out on the East Coast, or as he's known in certain circles as Lord Cat. Jason, you there?
Oh, I'm here.
Now, Jay, are you okay tonight?
Oh, I'm all right. I'm not messed up.
Because you were saying something in the chat room, and I wasn't exactly sure if you were doing okay.
I'm okay.
But I know you wanted to talk to Danny, too.
Yeah, but before I do that, I just wanted to say something to 8-Bit Jake, if he's still listening. Just for having that eMachines laptop, he should be beaten with a customer service representative.
That's for sure.
Anyway, Danny, what I wanted to ask was actually two questions. One of them's a bit of a joke. Have you ever seen a programmer's art? And if so, do you get a kick out of it?
Yes, and all the time.
Is it always a purple square?
No, they've branched off into other, basic Windows colors.
Oh, okay.
ouch.
And my other question, how much interaction do you have with programmers? Because I know when I did some work, one of the problems we had was the program was generating invalid 3D file format for us, so we actually had to speak with the artists and see what we could do. Mm-hmm. How much interaction do you actually have with the people who create the engine?
Quite a bit, actually. In fact, I have three programmers sitting in cubes right next to me, and I just happen to be working with them. It's pretty normal, at least in my own personal experience, to have a very close relationship with at least one or two programmers on the staff. Mostly because it helps to know what's happening in the engine, at least from the technical side, and maybe I can, since I know the 3D software inside out, maybe I can figure something out about, okay, if there's some weird graphics glitch, say a texture or something, then maybe I can look at my actual files and see if it's there. Or if one of my animations doesn't look correct in the engine, it helps to have a programmer try to explain, how the animation is processed, and then I can sort of extrapolate and see if that data is, matches with what I'm exporting.
Oh, cool, because the last problem I had, it was always the programmer's fault, and nothing the animator could do.
It really depends. Most of my colleagues are, pretty even balance of art and tech, at least on the art side. Most of us have been working with computers and the game industry long enough where we understand that we have to know at least a little bit about how the programming and the code works in order to get our jobs done.
Because me, it was just a small little indie group.
Mm. Oh, yeah. Indie groups are always interesting like that, where people tend to kind of isolate themselves in the areas. You have the hardcore code monkeys and then the artistes. We
cannot touch code. I would qualify as a code monkey.
So that was that your first question or both your questions then?
No, that was both my questions.
All right. See.
Thank you.
Now, let me ask you this. And I'm asking you, Jason, directly. Okay. You have a Nintendo DS, right?
No, I don't actually.
Do you have the PSP or do you have either one?
I have the PSP.
Oh, you have the PSP.
Well, the DS was borrowed from a friend.
Oh, okay. Maybe that's where I heard. Which game is out there right now that you want?
That I want?
Yeah.
That's out right now.
Yeah.
Probably Mercury.
Oh, okay. So it's yours. Happy birthday.
Thank you.
See, that was a trick question there. Now you wish you would have asked for something more expensive, huh?
No, not really. My sister bought me an Xbox, so I'm happy.
All right, so you can send me like all your either put it on your Amazon wish list, or that's probably the easiest way to do it. So that way you don't have to like exchange any of your personal info, and I'll get that off to you as soon as possible.
Well, thank you, Chris.
It's no problem. Happy birthday. I really appreciate what you've done for us over the past few weeks, as well as what you've kind of get going on the wiki to try to get the show notes rolling along.
Yeah, I'm hoping User Bin Geek said he was going to be doing the show notes today. I'm not in the mood tonight.
It's okay. I understand. Happy birthday.
Right,
and hopefully you'll remember this. And if you don't, well, then this didn't happen. So, Jason, thanks again and happy birthday.
All right. Thank you very much. Have a good night, guys.
You too. Young guy out on the East Coast. I don't know how. I think we just started writing back and forth one day and just kind of started talking.
Another random connection.
Yeah, another random connection. Of course, we didn't meet on Flickr. I don't make that a habit either. I mean, this is honestly the first time I've ever been on Flickr. I'm like, oh, this is interesting. This is that's kind of cool. So you're like, it's a first, but it's actually quite an interesting way of meeting people using that as a social networking tool.
It is. I've been surprised lately. Initially, of course, I signed up just for the photo sharing. Handy place to stash my photos and not worry about bandwidth. But ever since looking at some of the different groups they have, the conversations, little mini forums, it's interesting meeting other people. I'm seeing that there are actually quite a few other designers and game developers who are on Flickr. They don't live near me, so I haven't really dealt with that. But yeah, it's just been a real interesting way of meeting people.
Have you met people from your own company there?
No, I haven't, actually.
Oh.
As far as I know, my animation lead is the only one who's using it, and he learned about Flickr from me. So,
oh, cool.
That's kind of cool. But I've had people, contact me, discovering that, you're a game developer or an artist, and
it's so strange.
It's weird.
Yeah, for something that was as utilitarian as a photo sharing site, for Flickr to have entered that idea of connecting people and just waiting to see what happens. I'm almost waiting to hear for marriages that have come out of Flickr. I'm engaged right now, I know you want a piece of this, but you can't have the mango.
That's right.
So anyway, yeah, it's I think it was something that I might try again if should the opportunity arise. I mean, if I'm noticing anybody who's got something interesting, even from a digital photography perspective, which is usually what I'm more attracted to when I'm watching, when I look at Flickr, I watch what people are posting more stylistically than anything else, and not necessarily following people other than the people who are my contacts, like yourself. I'll actually look at tags, though, general tags. Like, okay, I tagged this. How many other gummy tags are out there?
Right.
Like, oh, that's interesting. And then I ended up posting it subsequently to Amazon.com for photos because now Amazon, you can take a picture of something, of a product, or actually use the product to take a picture.
Oh, right.
And then post the photo. And I've posted two. And apparently, the two that I posted haven't been as immensely helpful as the other ones, because apparently people like digital cameras just to take pictures of flowers. That's it.
I see a lot of that. I'm guilty of that myself, but
Well, I do it as well, but it's like all the couple of pictures that have been posted of flowers is like rated yes. This is like this 24 out of 25 people found this helpful, and like mine is like the gummy Vader, like 5 out of 9. I'm like, come on.
It's a gummy Vader.
Well, I was trying to do a macro, kind of getting a close-up, some shadow stuff, and then I had the stylistic one that I did with the isolating the blue color, and then it was black and white the for the rest of it, which you probably didn't see. You were only attracted gummy Vader.
I saw that. You're...
I think that was the most recent picture I've even posted to Flickr. I haven't been very shot happy in recent days. Yes, Jake? You can't do that. You can't pick up the microphone and then unmute yourself and then wave as if you're not going to talk. Come on, that's kind of rude. All right, so anyway, I'm kidding. It's not rude. I wanted I've got a stack of emails that I want to make sure we covered this week, since a lot of them came in. This one's from Carl Rogat, and before I get into reading it, I should remind you the phone lines are open, 888-PERILLO, 888-7474-556. If you happen to be listening live, and you can actually say something, unlike myself, go ahead and give us a call. So Carl, this is what he writes directly. I have discussed with a nonprofit association the possibility of making available to their membership the audio content from their upcoming conference via RSS syndication. The association is willing to distribute an appropriate preloaded RSS aggregator, also known as a news aggregator, such as iPodder, with a selection of 95 45-minute feeds. I don't know if he's quite got the terminology correct, but I think I know where he's going with that. However, they insist that the content be maintained in a secure, password-protected site. Here's where my problem comes in. This is from Carl. iPodder does not appear to support HTTPS and or password authentication. Is there any podcast aggregator that can be preloaded with selected feeds and has password protection and has HTTPS authentication? And I don't think any of those really exist, at least ones that you can get preloaded with selected feeds.
Unless you could get Nick Bradbury to do a one-off of Feed Demon by way of NewsGator or SmartStream Alliance that does the spot reader, Harry. They do that stuff. But, I mean, you'd have to go through it for a custom solution, I think, in order to get it done because – I don't think iPodder, iPodder X, Doppler.
But isn't there one developer who has said that you can customize your own podcasting application? There's
that custom reader, Active Web Reader from DeskShare.
No, I don't think that's it. There's another one.
A lot of them don't support HTTPS. I mean, they're not supporting the username and password features because for the most part, I think like probably Rush Limbaugh is the only one putting a podcast behind a password at this point.
Here's my question. He's discussed this with a nonprofit organization. So why would you want to password protect this content?
There's a lot of nonprofits that sell the research as a way to generate revenue for the nonprofit.
So how else could they do this then? Would they be able to, in an affordable fashion, slap DRM on the files?
Or there'd still be, then you'd have to do the password authentication after the files were downloaded.
Yeah, it doesn't look like there's going to be a supremely easy way to do it this way. I mean, it sounds like a great idea.
Well, I mean,
in theory,
the easy way to do it would be to offer a feed that is password protected that could be used in any reader that supports both enclosures and password protection. And then have the users create an account with the service and then get it like a unique URL for the feed.
And there are several places that
of course there's the barrier to entry of figuring out how all that works.
And see, that's the thing. Jake spoke to very well with that last phrase, the barrier to entry. You know, how difficult is this going to be for somebody who may not be proficient with what RSS is and what podcasting is? How easy is it going to be for you to subscribe to that feed and to tell people how to get it? You may, as Jake had alluded to, you may be better off either password protecting the URL or, you know, encoding that within the URL itself, their username for authentication, or, you know, putting it just on a web page for people to download on demand. That may be the easiest way to go. And then from there, they'd be able to store it on the local machine and synchronize it, you know, with iTunes to their iPod or with the Windows Media Player to their portable media device. Hang on just a second, folks. Oh, okay. Sorry. Technical difficulties on our end is all. It's not that big a deal. So that's it's an easy answer to a somewhat complicated question. Just because you can do it doesn't mean you should. My ultimate answer would certainly be to just put it behind a password protected page and let people download it from there and synchronize it on their own. Just because it'll be, I think, a lot easier in the long run. More people would know how to download an MP3 than to actually use a podcasting application for it.
We just had a caller that I accidentally hung up on, Brent.
Oh, that was the technical difficulty.
That was the technical difficulty. And his question was, he just got a Mac.
This may be him again.
And this could be him calling back in. So I'll
ask the question and then...
He was wanting to know if he had to be concerned about spyware, adware, and those types of things on a Mac.
All right. That's fair enough. We'll see if the caller is calling back. If this happens, folks, if you call the number 888-PERILLO... And something does happen. We're still kind of getting used to the phone system around here. It's easy, but it's complicated at the same time. So now I believe we've got the caller. He called back and is on the air right now. I'm sorry, I missed your name.
It's Brent, and I'm calling from Tampa.
Brent, hey.
How you doing, Chris? I'm a big fan of yours.
Thanks. Tampa, Florida, I'd assume.
Yeah.
As opposed to Tampa, Colorado.
That's right.
So you're surviving down there the summer?
Yeah, I'm hoping that we won't have another 4 hurricanes like we did last year.
Oof.
It was real bad.
I think the worst we've had so far up here is a tsunami. It wasn't a warning, really. They said that there was an earthquake like in and around where San Francisco is, and a lot of people who would have been affected by it had no idea it even was even happening. So we're kind of clueless over here. As far as weather goes, we're clueless.
Yeah, I heard L.A. had a couple of earthquakes in the last week.
Yeah, makes you kind of wonder what's going on.
Yeah.
Kind of scary, isn't it?
Sure is.
All right. So your question was about spyware on the Mac. You want some?
No. Oh. I bought my first Macintosh. I got one of the iMac G5s, 2 gig, 20-inch.
Sweet machine.
With a gig of RAM.
Did you get the new one? Or
the new one.
Yeah, that's the one I got, too.
Oh, it's awesome. And I've had it for about 2 weeks, and I'm getting pretty good at using it now. But you always hear that it's real hard to get any kind of viruses or spyware on the Mac. So I don't have any kind of spyware software or any kind of antivirus software on there. Do I need to be concerned about that?
Well, in my humble opinion, no. And that's that's 99% positive no. Most spyware that's available today is only available on the Windows platform, and largely because it's the tallest nail, the Windows platform. And that, when I say Windows, I should qualify it further and actually say Internet Explorer. A lot of things get downloaded and then installed, and chaos ensues. Now, that being said, there have been cases where the Macintosh has come under attack of a virus or something that would seem to be insidious. In the release of Tiger, Apple's new operating system, which of course you're running with the new G5, they have the dashboard application. And
right.
I'm sure you've played with dashboard before.
Oh, yeah, it's great.
Each one of those widgets is a little web page. And it just looks pretty. For the most part, all it is just a little web page that sits there and does a certain function. Like this particular web applet allows you to look up words in the dictionary, and this one allows you to track flights, and it looks pretty. Well, widgets, being web pages, can do what they were designed to do. And it was written about, now whether or not any exploit has actually happened, but it has been written that in theory a widget potentially has the potential of having a payload that is spyware-like, being a web page itself. Now whether or not that's actually going to happen, no one's really seen it. So as long as you're downloading a widget from a reputable source, either from Apple.com, if you get it from Version Tracker, just checking the ratings. There's another one. I think it's dashboardwidgets.com, it's either dashboardwidgets.com or desktopwidgets.com. One of the two is a fantastic repository for new widgets. But for the most part, in running your web browser, if anything, you're going to run into problems not being able to load spyware rather than running into having the issue of actually loading spyware. Because of the fact that you've got security through obscurity.
Right. Plus I'm using the Safari and the the built-in email program which seems pretty good.
Oh yeah. And see, that's the thing, if let's say someone sent you an attachment, like an EXE attachment, OS X wouldn't know what to do with it. I mean, it would just be like, it's gobbledygook. It's nothing. So you're safe. Being on OS X, you're absolutely safe from spyware. Again, like I said, I say that 99%. There's always a 1% chance that something may happen at some point in the future. But for the most part, I think you'll be in the clear for quite a while. As far as spyware, to a certain degree, viruses, although there are viruses out there, and as OS X proliferates, a lot of the security issues are also going to proliferate. The reason why Windows gets attacked and the reason why Internet Explorer gets attacked, it's because it's the tallest nail. The tallest nail always gets pounded. It's because if you're someone, let's take a psychological profile of a spyware developer. I mean, let's look beyond the fact that they're going to hell when they die. They want to make money. They're in it because it's not necessarily to destroy systems. They're in it to make money. So they want to go after the biggest audience, and the biggest audience is on Windows. And more so, they're using Internet Explorer. So this is what they tend to concentrate on. Now, let's say, for argument's sake, OS X suddenly, overnight, gains huge traction, just tremendous traction. You're going to see an increase of exploits and security issues crop up. I mean, things like spyware. But that's probably not going to happen, you know, if it ever happens, at least for another 5 years.
Right.
So, it's a simple answer, and that's no.
Well, I like the feature in the email program, which I never saw in a Windows email, where you can bounce back email that somebody sends you that you don't want them sending it to you, which, from what I understand, acts like the email doesn't exist. Is that right?
For the most part, they cheated a bit, and they use that, and certain spam systems are going to recognize that as being a bounce. I used that for a little while too when I was playing around with a slightly earlier version of mail. It didn't seem to have any effect. I seemed to get just as much spam as I got before, so I was like, well, I'm not even going to bother with it. But it is a very neat feature.
I have one more question. There's a rumor going around that says that that Intel will possibly be buying Apple. Is there any truth to that?
You know, I know who started that rumor. It would be Robert Cringely over at PBS. He wrote it's actually a very insightful article positioning why Apple would have switched to the Intel chip, because they're trying to write Microsoft out of the picture. I would be one to believe that is a rumor, and it's pretty wild for Intel to purchase Apple. If it did happen, it certainly wouldn't happen within the next 5 years. It would have to be so far out. Could it happen? Oh, certainly. I wouldn't be surprised, but I would say that the truth to that rumor is founded in nothing. Nothing more than wild speculation. It would be interesting, certainly.
Yeah, it would be.
But, you know, like yourself, I mean, did you feel that you needed to return the new iMac that you bought just to wait for the Intel one to come out?
No, because I usually buy a new computer like every couple of years anyway.
Yeah.
I figure by the time the Intel's come out, you know, I don't usually want to buy a product the first year it comes out anyway. So I figure within 2 to 3 years, I'll just give this computer to my wife and buy one of the new ones.
That's the way to do it. In fact, my fiance inherited... She got a new computer. I actually got her. She had a really old one, and so I ended up getting. I had a new one. I had inherited a new one, and it just passed on to her. So I know how that goes.
Okay, thanks for taking my call, Chris. I'll continue listening here in Tampa.
Yeah, thanks, Brent. I certainly appreciate the support and you listening. We're doing our
no
best
problem.
Out here.
Talk to you later.
All right,
bye.
Thanks, Brent. Again, the phone lines are open, and the number is easy to remember, so long as you know how to spell my name, 888-PERILLO, 888-7474-556. It's pretty simple to remember. And I know that you know, Danny's got a certain amount of time on his hands, and I know that he had just a few minutes to have some. How was the dinner?
Oh, dinner was great. Yeah, I got my fill. I'm all good.
Oh, you're good.
I'm good.
You're safe. You're satiated. Well, now
I wanted to
be able to play back possibly the interview I did with Todd Bishop earlier today. He's a reporter for the Seattle PI and Seattle Post Intelligencer. It's a pretty big paper, pretty big circulation up here in Seattle, and he writes the Microsoft blog for Seattle PI, a traditional reporter who now bridges the gap between credential press and blogging. And he interviewed me for a segment that's going to run tomorrow, so I figured, hey, turnabout's fair play, and I figured I'd interview him. So and after we play that, we'll be back with more live calls and our guest Danny Non.
Yes.
We do have a little more time on the phone lines if you have any questions you might want to ask. 888 888- 888-747-4556. That's 888-PERILLO. A few minutes left, and certainly if you've got something on your mind for this week, be entertaining that. And the more I keep thinking about it, the more I think we need to find a way, either by using Skype voicemail or some other type of record to MP3 format, of recording, having people call in and record their thoughts or their questions. So I need to start looking for a way to facilitate that. It may make it easier.
We do have this fancy phone system.
Yeah, but the problem with that is that if they're not listening live, we can't get their questions, and we don't have voicemail in the system because it doesn't go through MP3.
We could have voicemail on the system.
Yeah, but it won't go to MP3.
It would go to Wave. That's close enough.
No, it won't. How's that going to go to Wave?
Because it's connected to a computer.
Oh, so the voicemail we'd have on this could go to, in theory, go to a WAV file?
I believe so, yes.
Check on that.
All right.
Because I think we might want to go that route just to get voices.
Otherwise, we could get one of those apps that's actually sort of like a voicemail system for the computer.
Yeah, well, like I said, you know, Skype has got their Skype voicemail, and that would work just as well in theory.
Except for the audio quality is just crap.
Exactly. And that's the only thing that would keep me from using something like a Skype. I would just soon have people call in a regular number and then redirect a voicemail when we're not live. That way we've got a cache of people waiting for us every single week. So we're going to be working on that now, and that's probably going to take us another 4 months, just like it took us about that long to get the live phone call.
Hey, it doesn't involve Quest, so it might take less time.
Yeah, that's true. or any type of voiceover IP solution. It could actually work, and now we're getting treated with dessert, a whole bunch of gummy bears. As I said, Ponzi's become addicted to gummy bears.
Yeah, I'm more preferential to Sour Patch Kids.
Oh, I remember Sour Patch Kids. Those are good.
It's all about the sugar crustiness and just that tart. Taste.
Yes, yes. But we got gummies. We got really small ones.
Horribly flavored. Oh, my God. Oh.
See, that's my problem. I don't trust the flavors because you just never know. The combinations together could be brutal.
Hey, Lordcat offered a suggestion. Just send your MP3s to an email address. That might work.
Well, there is a way. Actually, you know what? We could use like one of those audio blogger services and just get like have like sort of a general mailbox.
Yeah, that could work.
Because then they'd automatically get posted.
I don't know if we want to do that either. I just soon have. It's got to be a phone number. It's got to be super simple phone number. Come to us in either MP3 or Wave. That's the only way we're going to be able to do this. Because that way it'll be easy to edit and take in and answer all in one.
Or we could just we could schedule times of the day when we could like have people call into this system.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah, right. That's going to happen. No, that's out. That's
you know,
out.
Like 4 a.m. works.
Exactly. That's out. They're not doing that. That might be a little too difficult. So, you know, in this being your first experience, at least with us, are you totally taken aback, Danny?
No, I'm having a blast here. This is just incredibly cool, you know. Are you surprised to hear that?
Yeah, quite, because that's not how I would use, that's not the word I would use to describe exactly what we do around
here.
No
one's ever called us cool.
Really? Yeah. Oh, I think it's just fun.
Neat. I think is about the biggest kind of word that has been used to describe the show.
Although Chris was described as an online celebrity today in the Seattle Times. So.
Ooh.
But internet famous.
Oh, know, internet famous. Yeah.
There's a t-shirt that says I'm internet famous, and it's kind of funny. It's kind of cute that way. So, you know, you're back to the daily grind then tomorrow.
Yes, I am.
Still working on the characters.
Yep. Got a big deadline coming up, you know, so don't think I have to work this weekend.
A death animation, then?
Oddly enough, yes. I'm working on a character being set on fire.
Wait, how do you animate death? And literally, do you have to? I mean, so for instance, you're having to animate someone who's set on fire, and
right.
How you're obviously not going to do this yourself.
No.
And you probably run out of cats by
you
now.
You watch a lot of Jackass, don't you?
I did, but. I don't know. Some of it is just kind of guesswork. You know, you look at action movies and see how, you know, what the stunt guys look like to make the that burning action really big and exciting. So I kind of mimic the motions of the character and then have them fall over. The actual fire stuff is done by someone else on the team, so I don't have to deal with, you know, making flames bounce around or whatever. I just have to do the body motions.
You know, it's funny because the first, like, really major death sequences that I remember in video games were Mortal Kombat.
Oh, yeah.
And those were, like, so controversial.
Yeah, yeah.
And you look at the like image quality of that versus the image quality of what's happening in death sequences now.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just, it's nothing.
Yeah, the Mortal Kombat ones were, they're basically just a bunch of photographs. I think they just took video and cut it out. So that's why they kind of got that pseudo-real look to it. But yeah, now you're chopping off limbs, beheading characters, and it's all done right there in front of you.
So what's the smartest game? And I know you mentioned Jade Empire tonight. What's the smartest game that you've ever seen or played?
Smartest game I've seen or played? Wow. I'd have to say the Katamari Damacy, however you pronounce that. I haven't played it myself. I've seen it played. I know it involves collecting this huge ball of junk. It's a Japanese title, so, you know, it kind of might explain some of the weird, you know, concepts around it. But it's been sort of like a sleeper hit with a lot of gamers, including the most hardcore, you know, FPS guys. They get the game for PS2, they start playing, and it's one of those kind of addictive adventure puzzle type of things. My PS2 is still in storage, so I still haven't played it, but everything I've heard, it's, you know, one of those great games. I guess at E3, they had a giant garbage ball on the floor, sort of to celebrate the success of the game.
Okay.
Yeah. So, that's sort of the coolest thing I've heard in recent months.
Garbage.
Yeah, it's just junk.
Who knew?
Who knew? Yeah, it's weird hearing conversations online. People say, oh, have you collected the pink dress yet? Like, pink dress? What, oh, man. What the heck kind of game is that? But it looks pretty cool, and it seems like it's a fun game.
It's relatively new, then.
Yeah, it's pretty new, I think, within the last few months.
All right. So you said the PS2's in storage. Do you even have anything out other than the PSP at home?
I have my Xbox.
Xbox.
The PSP, the PS2 got shoved
oh,
in...
Oh, PS2.
Yeah, PS2 got shoved in storage when I was when I first moved up here, and just haven't had any games that I felt like I needed to play. Plus, I got sucked into Halo and Halo 2. So the Xbox was sort of a permanent fixture in my living room.
So now, there's news that Halo was actually going to make it to the big screen, but then it's not. They're talking about it. It may happen. It's not going to happen.
That's about all I've heard.
Yeah. I don't know if I could even... I don't know much about the background of Halo, but I can't imagine it actually turning into a movie and being that enjoyable.
It'd be kind of like a Stargate kind of
thing.
Yeah.
Well, they're doing Doom. They're making a Doom movie.
That's right. And who's starring...
The Rock.
The Rock, yeah.
Yeah.
And they do have a BFG, although they're calling it something else. It's not what the BFG would normally
stand
for.
It's a big fancy gun or something.
Big fancy gun.
No, it's like bio something, something, something.
Something a little more kid-friendly.
Yeah, exactly. It's more family-friendly. You know, for Doom, which should be a family-friendly
game. You need family-friendly when you got a guy that's like just killing things at random.
I remember Duke Nukem 3D.
Oh, that was a great one.
I started playing that, but I couldn't get into any FPSs. I just couldn't do it. It just wasn't that compelling. For me, it wasn't that as compelling as like a puzzle game.
Right. It's a rare thing for me. I think over the years, the only FPSs I've really gotten into were Halo and Half-Life 2. I didn't like Half-Life 1, but Half-Life 2 was just kind of neat. I think I was mesmerized by the eye candy in it. Mm. That's about it.
I got into it for about a day, and it was like, you know, for me, much like Ponzi, it's got to be quick, easy, simple. Turn mm-hmm. it on, turn it off. That's it. You know, I don't want to be obsessing over it. And like the Lego Star Wars, that it was just that it was so addictive.
That's a really cool game. If anything, it's just a great idea.
Yeah.
You know, it kind of takes the best of both worlds. You know, we're all Star Wars geeks, and Legos are cool.
Well, some of us used to be bigger Star Wars geeks than we are today, but that's not really our fault.
Yeah.
I would blame Lucas for that more than anything.
Yeah.
You know, it always happens. We always come back to the subject of Star Wars. I gotta stop doing that. I gotta bust myself of that Kevin Smithing habit. That's how it happens, you know. He just kind of perpetuates that whole... I really wonder what Kevin Smith thinks of Revenge of the Sith. Honestly, truly.
Doesn't he blog?
He does, on View Askew, but I really wonder what he thinks of it. Truly.
Maybe we should get him on the show.
We can angle for it. We can try. Don't know how well that's going to happen, or if it's going to happen. It's always worth a shot, I suppose.
Hey, you got the guy from Alias on the show. That can't be that.
Yeah, but
big
I had a connection. You gotta have the connection. You gotta know the right people. You know, if you don't know the right people, it doesn't do you any good. Yeah, but anyway, so in recent news, this is another question I wanted to ask you. There's been talk about voice actors in regard to video games. Had that kind of those politics trickled into... Yes, Jake? You were saying? has that trickled into Amaze at all, any of that controversy?
Not that I know of. I don't think it really affects us since, you know... At least with, you know, with the Pirates game, you know, we're dealing directly with Disney, so it's their business about getting the voice actors, and since it's, you know, their movie, they already own the rights to all that stuff. But yeah, I don't know. It was kind of an interesting turn of events to have the voice actors.
So I mean, if that's like one of the more recent news that that I've seen, you know, in the world of gaming. What's water cooler talk then? If you don't talk about politics necessarily.
Oh,
the politics of video games.
Politics of video games. You know, it's anything that doesn't have to do with our work. I mean,
really?
Yeah, we especially if a lot of the guys in our company, you know, some guys are musicians, so they'll start talking about the latest music or what clubs that they've played in. You know, we have a bunch of avid photographers there, so we'll, you know, talk about photography. You know, so just anything kind of take our mind off of work.
Whatever it is that you're supposed to be doing,
exactly.
Basically.
Anything not related to games.
That's pretty universal.
Yeah,
you know,
I think so.
Taking a break from the normal drudgery of things.
Yeah.
But, Danny, no, we appreciate the time you spent, you know, the 3 hours that you'll never get back of your life with Jake, myself, and Ponzi, and hopefully you enjoyed your dinner and gummy bear dessert.
Oh, it was great.
Unless you don't like gummy bears, in which case I'm having your share.
I love gummy bears.
So, Danny Nahn, NGAN, and it's DannyNahn.com.
Yes.
Okay. And that's after I didn't know how to I didn't bother to ask him how to pronounce his name over email. So I'm happy that I by the end of the show I've mastered it, at least for now. You ask me tomorrow and I'm liable to forget. So thank you, Danny, for coming in, and of course more information over at DannyNahn.com. And he's also on Flickr, and I think I've added you as my friend too.
I believe so.
I hope so. And if I didn't, I apologize. I've got just maybe about 100 people who I actually know. I make it a point not to add someone unless I actually know them. Mm-hmm. With social networking, it's a little crazy. Of course, we've got to thank Limelight Networks for providing the live stream for the Chris Perillo Show. And, of course, the phone number 888-PERILLO for next week. I don't know if we're going to be taking any live calls. However, I'm going to keep pushing forward on some type of record to Wave or MP3 service so that you guys can leave messages on the line, and then we can listen to them playing back during the show, so that we've got, you know, a lot more of your voices integrated in every weekly show that we do. And then, of course, I've got to thank Microsoft Windows Media for supporting the Chris Perillo Show. You're going to see a big presence from them in next week at GnomeDex. Again, happening next week, we're going to be streaming that live through, I believe, the same URL that we're using for this show. So, you know, keep an eye on the URL come next Thursday night. And, of course, all day Friday, all day Saturday, we'll be streaming audio over this very URL. So thanks for everybody who's been involved. Thanks, you know, Jake for, you know, taking the time out of his day of playing with birds. And then, of course, Ponzi from taking a break for GnomeDex to sit in with Danny and myself and Jake. And thank you for listening. We certainly appreciate your support. We're only doing this because you're listening. So keep doing it, and we'll see you later.
The Windows Media stream for the live broadcast of The Chris Perillo Show is provided by Limelight Networks. Listen to the live Chris Perillo Show in Windows Media Player. Download the latest version of the player for Mac and Windows users at Microsoft.com/Windows Media.